Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay in the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments that you would like to make during this broadcast, I'm going to give you the call-in number because we have our very special monthly guest with us tonight, Dr. Brian Hooper. And if you have any questions you would like to address with him, you can feel free to call in. The call-in number is area code 646-716-4893. And I will repeat that one more time, area code 646-716-4893. 4893. Or as we're on the show, you can always email me with any questions you might have if you prefer not to call in. And my email address is bonkaye at AOL.com. Before we get started with the show, I have a few brief announcements to make. First, this coming weekend, we have our Houston retreat. I'm so excited about this, because this is something that we've been planning for the last year, and it's finally coming to fruition. So I will be joining a couple dozen women, actually, in Texas. It's going to be a really big outing, and it's going to be a wonderful healing weekend. And there's still room for anybody who wants to come. If you're interested, just let me know at bonkaye@AOL.com, and we'll make some quick arrangements for you. But I'm really looking forward to seeing some of my old friends that I've met before, and some of the new women who are coming. And I know it's going to be a wonderful experience where we can bond together. It'll be certainly memorable for the rest of your life to have a weekend like this, and all other women who come to these say there's nothing like it, meeting other women in your situation, because most of us don't need women in our situation. And even on an online support group, it's really different. So once again, if you're interested in joining us, just drop me a note. I just want to also mention that we're moving ahead with our Adult Children of Gay Fathers support group. I have a wonderful coordinator, Jason, who's really overseeing the project. He now has set up a group on Yahoo, and also we're getting a website set up. We do have chat, support chat, and so if you have adult children who you feel would benefit from this, drop me a line at bonkaye@AOL, and I'll send you all the details. And I did want to mention also that I'm going to be resuming or restarting chat for the United Kingdom starting in April. We have a number of women who are part of my support network who really need the support, and there's a five-hour time difference. So it's not practical for the women to be joining my online support unless they're up at 2 in the morning. So this way it will be every Monday evening, UK time, 9 o'clock. And I'll be sending out notices in the next newsletter. So if you're interested in joining the UK support chat, if you're anywhere in the UK, including Ireland, we'd be thrilled to have you so that you can meet other women from your area and talk about problems and issues that are facing all of you. So without much further ado, I'd like to introduce my guest, Dr. Brian Hooper. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Bonnie. How you doing, hon?
Well, everybody's always excited when you're coming back. I will tell you that much. You have a very big support network here.
I get excited about coming back. I look forward to it several days beforehand. I really do. It's always fun.
You know, it's interesting. Before we go on to our topic for tonight, which is one that's really important that the women have been requesting, a friend of mine sent me this article, and it was in paper. It's called Welcome Out Clive Davis. And I just wanted to know your opinion of this, because
I also want to let you know when you first mentioned that to me and now, I've had a chance to read an article or two about that. So,
okay. That was fast. You are quick.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
so it says in this article, unless your taste is limited to polka, your music has been impacted by Clive Davis. Responsible for finding or cultivating the careers of artists such as diverse as Janis Joplin, Miles Davis, Annie Lennox, and Whitney Houston, he has helped shape the sound of half a century. And, as he reveals in a new biography, he's bisexual. Quote, after my second marriage failed, I met a man who was also grounded in music. Having only had loving relationships and sexual intimacy with women, I opened myself up to the possibility that I could have that with a male, and I found I could. Davis is currently involved with another man who isn't in show business, but I never stopped being attracted to women. Bisexuality is misunderstood. The adage is that either you're straight or gay or lying, but that's not my experience. To call me anything other than bisexual would be inaccurate. Welcome out, Clive. All right, so tell me, Brian, what do you think?
Well, you know, he is the authority on his own life. And I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to be told what my experience is or isn't, because too often I've been told, oh, you just think you're gay. You're not really gay. If you would just try, you know, you wouldn't be. So I can't, you know, I can't really render judgment about whether or not he's really equally attracted erotically and emotionally to both men and women. I kind of doubt it, but this is what the gentleman says. And I think the thing that matters most to us is, do the listeners want to be involved with somebody for whom that might be the case, or do they want to be with somebody who is completely, you know, attracted to a female? That's the most important thing. I do believe many men tell themselves they're bisexual because somehow they can cling on to a little bit of heterosexuality for the perks that go with that. I've had sex with women. I may have even, you know, had a child with a woman. It wasn't bad. Therefore, I'm bisexual. And when in reality, with many men, they simply were conflicted gay men who were seeking to do the best they could at the time with what it was that they understood from the way they were brought up. So, again, I really, you know, I don't want to be judgmental and say, I know what your experience, Clive, is, and you don't, because I don't know. But I can tell you what I know to be the case with many people, Bonnie. I hope that's helpful.
I think it is. And more importantly, why, Clive, did you have two failed marriages? Maybe you weren't quite the husband that you needed to be because you couldn't be, because you were distracted by thoughts of men. I just find it very unusual that at this particular age, he's no youngster if he was working with these singers, he must be in his 70s, that all of a sudden he just found himself, you know, wanting to try it out. Like, okay, it worked with me for women, let me see if it could work with me for men. I mean, do you feel most straight men would think like that? Or?
No, I don't. And one of the quotes that I have from him is an article I'm looking at, says, he recalled the experience, and then, quote, I had not been at all repressed or confused during either of my marriages. I hadn't fantasized about men. I was not at all interested in anonymous sex, but sex with a male didn't repulse me, and it provided welcome relief. I think most of the straight guys that I know would say welcome relief. I mean, they would run out of the room because it would be anything but relieving. It would be anxiety provoking.
Well, he did admit he's not straight. He does say he's bisexual.
Right.
Whatever.
Yep.
I mean, he was on that road, I guess, late in life. You know what? He may have been hanging out on that Kinsey scale for a while.
Maybe he
wasn't quite sure if he was a 3 or 4 or 5.
Yep.
Maybe as he got older, it just switched over. You know, that scale is so confusing to me, Brian.
I don't think it's very helpful.
No, I don't either.
I want to encourage your readers, you know, here's the bottom line. Does it help you trying to figure out if the Kinsey scale is accurate or inaccurate, or where your husband might be on it? Does it change anything for you? And I think for the majority, the answer is no, it doesn't change anything. That's not the point. Again, I keep coming back to the phrase you like, is this the life and relationship you signed up for or not?
No, that's the thing you've come up with that I'm stealing from you. I think you have it mixed up.
I'm glad to like.
I stole that from you when you say, is this what you signed up for? And I think that's the bottom line. I use it all the time, and I do tribute and credit you with that. And it's really true. It really brings it to perspective. Is this what you signed up for when you got married?
Right.
You know, and I often say, you sign up, and it says, for better or worse, richer or poorer, sickness and health, but that does not say for straight or for gay.
Right.
Because if you
right.
did include that in there, I bet you women wouldn't go for it.
I don't
and
think
that's my
would, no.
Right? I mean, I think that's why they leave that one out. So right. I think that it's nothing, you know, you have to realize this is not what you signed up for, as Brian says. You wanted a marriage with a man who was straight, not a man who was gay. And you don't have to sit and think, and it's not only with gay, but any kind of behavior that's out of the norm for you.
Right? Exactly. Exactly. No, what,
I mean, I was having this conversation the other day about cross-dressers and, you know, how women were saying, well, you know, cross-dressing is mostly straight men, you know, and so if their husbands are cross-dressing, they feel bad about it because they don't like it, but, you know, people try to make them feel guilty. Well, so big deal, he likes to dress up. If you're not comfortable with that, then you didn't sign up for that, right?
Right. Did you know if you knew he was cross-dressing, you know, if you had matching outfits on your while you were dating, then you don't get to complain. But if that wasn't
right,
hey, you know, if your handbags didn't match when you were dating, then I think
exactly.
that was a complaint. You know? Yeah.
I agree with you on that. So yeah. One of the things that I asked Brian if he could address tonight, this has come up a lot during the month. And for a lot of our women, I mean, it comes up all the time, but it just was a prevalent topic after our last conversation with you. A lot of our women are dealing with anger issues
mm-hmm.
because their lives have been turned upside down. I mean, one woman tonight, my heart goes out to her. She was in our support chat. She was married for 25 years into what she thought was a good, you know, marriage. And now all of a sudden that's changed. And, you know, we understand that. You know, men come to terms with themselves. But it's how they come to terms with themselves. And it's
right.
a matter that sometimes they turn on you. And I try to explain, well, it's a topsy-turvy kind of reaction. Many of them feel that they've, you know, lived this life they didn't want to live to start with because they had to support you or take care of their families and you were the ones responsible for them not fulfilling their lives as gay men. I mean, there's no logic necessarily to it, but they do feel that way. But a lot of our women are angry over many issues. One woman, who's a wonderful member of our support network, is very upset. You know, the first time you see your husband with another man after your marriage, even
sure.
though on an intellectual level you might know it, but
right.
seeing it really makes you upset
right.
and angry.
Right. Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit on how we can work with that?
I would love to talk about that, Bonnie.
Okay.
And so, you know, I want to give the ladies the triple A advantage here, okay? The triple A advantage. And we're going to talk about each one of these A's. The first A stands for awaken your awareness. And what I would like for the ladies to do is to begin to recognize how often they are ruminating over and over again and how that grinds them down. Just become aware of that. Awaken your awareness. Because when we're angry, so oftentimes, whatever it is, and this is true, you know, about relationship things or things at the office or wherever, we tend to think about it and think about it and think about it, turning it over and over and over in our heads. So the first thing to do is become aware of the anger. And when you're doing it, just become mindful of it, okay, so that you know how much it is controlling your life. That's the first point.
Mm-hmm.
And all, no matter what we're doing, you know, if a person says taking stock of their life in any area, they need to become aware. If it's financial management, they need to become aware of how often they're dropping $3 for a cup of coffee, right? So become aware of your anger. The second one is assess your assumptions. Assess your assumptions. Does rehearsing your anger or your unanswered questions over and over in your head, change anything? Does it make your life better? Rehearsing that anger and all those unanswered questions. Does turning over every stone again and again do anything other than bury you under the pile of your own stones? Does that make sense?
It does.
Follow me so far? Yeah. And ask yourself, how would your life be different if you could not think those thoughts? Just pause for a moment and ask yourself, what would my life be like if I couldn't think those thoughts, if they were completely absent? Would I be happier? Would I be more fully functioning? Just take a moment and do that. And most people will say, oh my gosh, it's a whole different life if I'm not doing that. And what I want to say is I have no problem with people being angry. Anger is an appropriate emotion. We got to have anger or we'll go into depression. But if we stay with being angry all the time, it will do nothing but eat us up, and we're paying the rent for somebody else to live in our heads. And I say it's time to evict that person. So become aware of your assumptions and recognize that just thinking those thoughts, my God, why did he do this, and how he cheated me, and he told me all these lies, and rehearsing that doesn't make you any happier or healthier. Now, the thing that goes along with that is the recognition that most of our lives, Bonnie, most of our lives are driven in the same way that we drive a car. You don't think to yourself, oh, I'm coming up on a red light, I need to raise my right leg and put it on the brake. You just do it, right? Because it's programmed.
Huh?
So, likewise, we need to take a look at doing a software update, if you will, on the computer that is your brilliant mind, and saying, you know, I could make a choice to do something other than always going to this angry place. I can actually catch myself going there and saying, you know, honey, this is not good for me. I am not going to go there now. I'm going to focus on something else this moment. I'm going to breathe, and one of the techniques I like to do is to say, I'm going to take all the energy of that anger, and I'm going to put it into a little ball, and I'm going to imagine sending that ball off into the sun, where all of the stuff that's in that anger can be consumed, and the energy of that anger can be redistributed in the universe for some good. Just because when we do that in our imagination and do it, send it outward, what we're really doing is changing the flow of that energy inwardly and saying, I'm going to use all of that energy I'm putting into the anger into putting into renovating my life. I'm going to start thinking about what I can do to take better care of me. That's what you do. You don't get revenge. You get equity in your own life. Does this make sense so far?
Some sort of.
Yeah. And
well, I mean, a little revenge I always think is good, but as long as you don't become consumed with it. But
well,
I mean, I do something similar. I think that maybe you would agree with this. I call it blocking. We were talking about that tonight.
Yeah, right.
I've been really good at developing a blocking method because,
mm-hmm.
you know, we all go through terrible things in our life, and I know that for me, my worst moments of despair was the time that I lost my children. And
yeah.
I think that if you have to ever dwell on something like that, you're never going to survive it. And
that's why
right. people always say to me, well, I think you're the strongest person I ever met. No, I'm very good at learning how to avoid unpleasant situations by blocking.
Right.
And it took me time to develop that. But, you know, by taking a negative thought that's going through your head at that moment and saying, block it, and then throw in something else that's really nice, something you enjoy,
right.
something that's pleasant.
That's right.
I mean, that's the method that's really gotten me through on unpleasant thoughts.
We are both on this track. This is what assessing your assumptions is really all about, is recognizing that turning those stones over and over, trying to figure things out, and rehearsing our anger doesn't make us feel any better. So let's use the stumbling blocks to become stepping stones into something much more helpful for us. So I think we're on the same page, Bonnie.
Uh-huh.
And the third thing I would encourage people to do, the third A, because we've had awaken your awareness, assess your assumptions. The third one is affirm acquisition of affirmations. Start speaking true and affirming things to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the New Testament Christian scripture writer St. Paul says in one of his letters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about these things, and the peace of God that passes all understanding will keep your hearts and minds. Will keep your hearts and minds. We move in the direction of our most dominant thoughts. So I say, you've given the guy too much of your good mental energy. Start every time you begin to have one of those angry, negative thoughts. Do what Bonnie says. Block the thought, replace it with something else, and start focusing on taking care of you. He didn't. So don't you go abandoning yourself. You take care of you now.
Right. I think that anger is an important part of the grieving process. But it's just you can't get caught up in there indefinitely. Because I say that, you know, if you stay in anger, then it turns to bitterness. And there's a big difference between anger and bitterness.
That's
right. You know, anger is something that, you know, you're fighting for you. Bitterness is something that will destroy you.
Right.
So you have to be able to balance it. No, yes, it's fine to be angry. You have a lot to be angry about. But
mm-hmm.
if you focus all that anger on your husband instead of taking that some of that positive energy and rebuilding yourself, you're never going to move anywhere, and you're going to alienate everyone, including your children.
Right.
Do you
one
feel that's
the,
true
one,
with children?
I think it's so true, Bonnie. I think it's so true because they will pick up on that, and they'll say essentially what they'll recognize. They may not have words to put to it depending on what their ages are, you know, and their perception. But what they'll say is, hey, You're stuck in that, and you're not taking care of me. You're not spending any energy on me. You become a different person when you just stay angry, because you
mm-hmm.
lose your own brilliance. You start to be drawn into the darkness of what's been done to you, rather than shining your own light on your own path to move forward. So shine your own light. One of the techniques that I've used with clients that they found helpful is to, when they're first dealing with their anger, okay, and we need to talk about it, and then there needs to be some time to do that, I'll have them write down everything that they're angry about, words or phrases or full sentences, write it down on a piece of paper, and then take some twine and tie it to a rock. And carry it with them for a little bit so that they're aware that they're carrying this anger around with them. And when planned ritually to let it go, take that rock with all of that anger attached to it to some lake or to the ocean, some river, and give it a big heave-ho
mm-hmm.
and wash your hands in the water. Wash your hands of it. And if that's a ritual that's part of your religion, great. For Jewish folks, you know, washing is an important ritual before having a meal. I would say wash your hands and then go have something to treat yourself and get on with your journey. Christians can remember their baptism, that they know who they are because they know whose they are, that they're a child of God and they're valuable. So they let
and
go of
the and even if you're
hand.
Not Christian, you still are a child of God. You're still valuable.
Absolutely.
No matter what religion you are, right?
I affirm that, Bonnie. I affirm mm-hmm. that. All I'm saying is I'm using, trying to help people connect up with their own powerful traditions, whatever they may be,
mm-hmm.
and utilize those, recognize that God doesn't want us to stay in a stuck place, but rather to turn our faces upward.
I think another really good way of getting past anger, I don't know if you'll agree with this or not, but I know it's worked for a lot of our women, start writing. A lot
yeah.
of times by journaling your feelings out, it really makes a big difference because keeping them locked in is not the answer. Being able to vent, you know, you're limited on who you can vent to on this particular issue. But you can sit down, and even if, you know, it doesn't have to be any kind of perfect grammar or English or look, you know, it could look sloppy. It doesn't matter. Just put your feelings out on paper and deal with them that way. When you see them, when you face them, when you look at them, many times you can say, yep, that is how I feel. And validate yourself. It's fine to be angry, but, you know, and I think that we're not telling you not to be angry. We're saying how you have to channel the anger. Don't you feel that sometimes this validates your feelings, at least that when you write it out and you see it, yes, I do have a right to be angry?
Oh, absolutely.
So many times people tell us, Brian, well, you know what, why don't you just get over it? Why don't you just get past it? You know, people don't understand this.
Right, right. And it's, you know, it's what I tell folks is with mourning and with anger, and these things get confused together because there is the mourning of the loss of the relationship you thought you had, and then the anger over the deception that came along with it in many cases, and further abuse. And when that first all explodes, it's like the screen of your life, like a computer screen, is completely full. And over time, what's on the screen begins to shrink down until it's a little icon at the bottom of the screen or off to one side, you know. And for a while, you know, for the first year, two, three, little things can, like, trigger that icon to open up, and it seems like it fills the screen, but at least you know it can go back to being a little icon, and you can look at it and say, you know what, I know you're there. I don't. It's not like the past is erased. It's still there, but I'm going on. And you click the icon and you put it back where it belongs. And
I want to ask if you think this would be helpful. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the problem lies in the fact that when, I mean, these marriages, when they end, that sometimes emotionally women can't end them in the sense that, you know, a lot of times when marriages end between straight marriages, straight husband and straight wife, there was a lot of anger, a lot of fighting, people grow apart, you know, they have a lot of differences. But in these marriages, a lot of times the women were happy. They're kind of blindsided because they didn't even have any clue, and now all of a sudden their husbands are leaving. So they have a hard time, you know, pulling away. They're keeping this hope up that maybe their husbands will, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's the truth. You know, they keep thinking, well, they'll go out there, they're going to see it's not all they think it is. They're leaving a family. They're leaving a wife who loves them. You know, it's a matter that, is he willing to give this all up just for sex? You know, a lot of the women think it's just about sex. Can you address that?
Well, it's not just about sex. So I would say to the ladies who are listening, did you marry your husband just for sex? And the answer is no. You married him because there was attraction at other levels as well. And so it is for men. There's an attraction at other levels for other men when we're talking about gay men here. So it's not just about the sex. It's they were really mismatched when they married you. And if they've got integrity, they said they told the truth, and they want to work to resolve the relationship and dissolve the marriage. But if they don't do it in a loving and mature way, then they tend to act out, and they're going to go out into the world, and they're going to engage their sexuality in really crazy ways for a while, too. But no, you know, if your husband is gay, he's gay. Move on.
Maybe you could explain this a little bit, because, I mean, this is kind of like a confusing factor, including for me sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
When women are married to a gay man, and let's say you're married 15, 20, 25 years, and the man seems like he's happy, you know, he seems to be having a good relationship with his family. I mean, maybe the sex is off, but in other ways, it's really a good, loving relationship. How is he really feeling inside? Is he feeling like it's a good relationship? Is he just acting like it's a good relationship?
No, I think it's dependent. I think it's dependent upon the man. But I will tell you, a lot of men, they compartmentalize. There's their their straight married life, and there are aspects of it that are really fulfilling for them. And then there's what they're getting on the side with other men, and it's often not a relationship with one man. It's furtive kind of encounters that they're having, and they may. Whenever we bifurcate our lives or compartmentalize our lives, we open up ourselves to both anxiety and depression. And I would say in the majority of these men, there's something underneath that just doesn't feel right, and it grows over time. And then it kind of comes up in ways that are not pleasant for them. So I think that they're faking it, but they know in their heart of hearts it's not. It doesn't feel genuine. It feels disingenuous for them.
Mm-hmm. But why do you think? Where do you think the anger comes in on their part?
On the part of the men?
Mm-hmm.
I think it comes. It has to do with the shame that they bear inside, and the shame is okay. So. How best to put this. So when a gay boy grows up, he learns, at least heretofore, society's changing, but it's not there yet. But heretofore, what they have learned through very subtle cues as well as very direct ways is that being gay is bad. Their sexual orientation is wrong. And so they bear a lot of that internalized shame, and they begin to do things where they will get praise and affirmation. And one of those things that they get praise and affirmation for is dating. And the ultimate praise and affirmation in that category comes when you say to mom and dad, okay, I'm engaged and I'm going to get married. Well, then you get all the societal benefits and all that. But underneath, they don't love me. They love their version of me. I'm not really affirmed. They're affirming the fake straight version of me. And that can create a lot of anger. And unfortunately, when they do come out, it's like a wounded animal sometimes that strikes out at the human that's the closest to them that may even trying to be helpful. And so this anger over their own shame that they've been living with for all these years then gets redirected at these women who are completely blindsided by them, who really do love and care for them. And I would say it's also, in many cases, another reason for the man to feel additional shame is because then he recognizes, even if he doesn't admit it, how he's behaved towards her. And, that's a further shame for him. So this does not excuse. It explains. It doesn't excuse the behavior. And I'm not saying, ladies, come to his rescue. No, don't go to his rescue. Take care of yourselves. But I am wanting you to understand it's about him. It's not about you. You haven't done anything wrong. You're fine. It's about him.
Recently you told me that you read a book that another one of our listeners wrote in to me about today called The Velvet Rage.
Very.
You said that was like a really good book.
I think it's a very good to understand. In fact, I was referring to portions of that book as I was just giving my explanation. I think it's a very good book to help all folks understand the developmental stages that get misdirected for gay men, and then the stages that happen when they start coming out.
Could you talk a little bit more about that?
About the coming out part?
Well, more about, what's the theme of the book? Was this somebody's personal life story? Was it a study that was done? Was it?
Okay, so it's written by a clinical psychologist. He shares part of his own story, but it's also vignettes out of the lives of men that he treated. And he gives wonderful examples in there to help explain the different phases, if you will, that men go through on their journey of coming out.
Mm-hmm. And do you think there's any one time that's more prevalent than another time for coming out?
You know, I'm never surprised when I hear people coming out at midlife, frankly, because midlife for men is a real significant passage time. Up until midlife, we're working on acquisition of relationship, acquisition of prestige, acquisition of power, acquisition of credentials, that kind of thing. And then the second part of life, midlife, we begin to say, well, what's it all about? What does it mean? And that often precipitates this existential kind of crisis, and that raises big questions. Who am I? Why am I here? And where am I going? And, you know, a guy begins to say, all of us begin to say in our midlife, well, how much time do I have left, and how do I want to spend it? Some gay men, do the more courageous thing. They own their selves. They come out. They live with integrity. But others engage what's referred to as a foreclosure on their coming out. They don't come out. They basically sell out, and they try to keep the lid on things. They will have furtive sex on the side, and usually they'll have a clinical depression that will come along with it, because there's a big price for keeping all of that hidden inside.
There's another factor that I believe this is contributing to the midlife type of time when men come out. You may not agree with me, but this has just been through my experience over the years. Many times when men are coming out, it's when their parents pass away. And that's usually at midpoint of life because, you know, by the time you're 50, you're starting to lose your parents. But a lot of times that's when all of a sudden our women see their husbands are coming out because they feel this need not to have their parents know because of rejection, and now that their parents are gone, now they're willing to come out. Do you find that?
Right. I think that that's absolutely true, and that speaks to the level of shame that they've been carrying around inside all these years as well. That if they did come out before the parents are gone, they fear that the shame consuming them. So, yeah, I completely agree with you, Bonnie. It contributes to it.
Ryan, one of the questions that women have posed, and I would just like to get your take on this.
Sure.
As far as telling your, let's say when the marriage breaks up and it's, you know, because of the reasons of homosexuality, and your husband doesn't want you telling his family. So instead, you know, he's telling his family that, you know, he's making up all kinds of stories, and then there's an alienation between, you know, the women and her in-laws because all kinds of stories are being told, everything that's not the truth.
Mm-hmm.
How do you suggest women handle this?
Well, I wouldn't go out of my way to call the in-laws and say, hey, you know, your son's giving you a crock of bull and he's gay. I wouldn't bother doing that, but because that's just investing too much energy in him. That's my point. However, I also would say, once it's out, it's out. He doesn't have control of information anymore. There's a price to be paid for coming out, and that's part of it. You don't get to control when you come out who knows and who doesn't know. So I would, you know, first thing, always keep yourself safe. Don't say anything that's going to get you physically hurt, you know. But just you, now don't tell my folks. I think I would say, encourage women to say, well, I'm not going to go out of my way to tell them, but you know what? I'm not going to keep your secret. I'm not going to be that inclined with you. We're coming undone. We're coming undone altogether. Don't become
hostile. It's just hard. You know, it seems like a lot of times the men come out of the closets and the women are pushed more back into the closets.
Yes.
And the husbands tell them, well, I don't want my family knowing, and, you know, it's not your place to tell them. You know, of course, I won't even get into it with the children. It's not your place to tell them. And then they're saying, well, you know, you think I'm gay. I don't consider myself gay. And, you know, for those men who are so deeply in denial, even though their women have all this proof on them, You know, it's just such a complicated mess.
Well, it is. Again, I don't encourage people to keep... There's a difference between confidentialities and secrets, okay? And these are secrets, and they're not healthy, and to be roped into being made to keep somebody else's secret is not a healthy thing. So I would say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to collude with you to keep your secret. I'm not going to announce it on the evening news, but I'm not promised to keep your secret. It's the same thing with, you know, frankly, it's the same thing with, see, it's, you know I don't have a problem with folks being gay. I mean, I'm a gay man. But what they're addicted to, if you will, is the crazy stuff they've done with their sexuality. Okay, that's what they're wrapped up in. And I don't keep the secrets of alcoholics. It doesn't make alcohol wrong, but what they've done with it is not a good thing. I don't think women are obligated to keep the secrets of their husbands that they're divorcing and bear the burden and be forced back into the closet themselves. They need their own support.
And that's what I say. You don't have to announce it on Craigslist, but, you know, and you don't have to put an ad in the paper, but I really do feel that you shouldn't have to take the blame for it either. I do tell women that if they feel they can't talk about it or they don't want to be the ones to tell the news, I mean, you can say that it was due to infidelity. If you don't want to say it was homosexuality, that's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're feeling bad enough to start with. Why do you have to feel worse?
Right. Thank you. Whenever we have to suppress our truth, we're being asked to take on a level of shame.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as a psychotherapist, that's never healthy.
And I think that's so important in trying to rebuild who you are. You know, you've been dragged through the mud here and dragged through the lies, and now, you know, the truth is coming out. It can't just come out, like you said, you know, at your husband's convenience or who he wants to tell. And he can't tell you, well, you can't tell anybody, but I'm going to be living this life with another man. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me that men expect this of their wives to keep themselves, you know, shut down on this.
Right. So, you know, if it's an issue of you need to speak your truth because there's some rational reason that other folks need to know, then you tell your truth. But if you find yourself obsessing about your ex and thinking about, you know, telling or not telling, and I would say don't invest so much energy into that. Invest all that emotional energy in what you're going to do with your own sweet life.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
And Brian,
I mean,
you could just... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I keep coming back to, we move in the direction of our most dominant thought. What are you doing with the focus of your attention, ladies? Are you focusing on moving forward, taking care of yourself, you know, handling issues? That's what you need to do. Don't let his infidelity to you cause you to be less than faithful to yourself. You be faithful to yourself. You be the best friend to yourself you can possibly be. You take care of yourself. You wanted to be treated well and he didn't, you treat yourself well.
That's such great advice. Brian, could you reassure women? I mean, I think, you know, I'd like for you to just say this. Some of them, no matter what I say, they still feel on some level that they have some responsibility for this. They say that my marriage was good for all these years, and then my husband tells me I wasn't supportive enough, I didn't do this enough or that enough. This is why he's having those thoughts. And they still take some feeling of responsibility because they thought everything was fine, and then, well, you know, I got sick or that my husband didn't want me anymore or my husband told me, you know, he doesn't want to, you know, terrible thing. It's like if women get sick or they lose a breast or whatever, my husband can't look at me anymore. You know, I'm deformed. So rather than cheat on me, he just went with other men. I mean, you know, they still take some responsibility that it's their fault. Can you reassure them that it's not?
Well, let's talk about a minute for why they might want to do that, engage in that behavior, and then I'll happily give that reassurance you're asking for, okay?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think if I can feel that somehow I'm somehow responsible for something, then maybe I could figure out how to undo it and make it all better again. Maybe I'll find some magic answer if I continue to engage in this magical thinking that I'm responsible. And I think that's why they're doing it. And what I want to say to these really wonderful women who are having that thought is, you really did the best you could with the marriage you were in. And you are not responsible. You can't fix it. There are no magic words to say. Other than the magic word forward for your own life, you know. Even if you weren't supportive and you knew it, you didn't make him gay. That was his choice to get together with other men. Okay? I hope I've said that plainly enough now.
Well, just reassurance that there's, you know, you can't make someone gay, you can't change someone from being gay, and no matter how wonderful you are, it has nothing to do with who somebody is.
That's exactly right.
I mean, because I feel that our women go over and above and beyond what most wives I know would ever endure, because I really do believe that these men who marry straight women, there's a prototype that they go for, psychologically, or like I told you before, consciously or unconsciously. You know, they're looking for someone who can be accepting and loving and nurturing and caring. And maybe even they feel somewhat broken going into these marriages, and they're looking for somebody to fix them because they're hoping those feelings will go away, because in many cases they don't want to be gay.
Well, and they're in love with the many men. I mean, I've got one client who, you know, he really loved the idea of being married and being a father and et cetera, and really went into it naively, believing that would be enough. You know, he truly cared for her, but he's reflecting on it. He said there wasn't a sexual attraction. We were more just simply friends and compatible, and it, quote, made sense. And so he did it. And think about how many people get married so young. They haven't even learned how to do much in the way of self-evaluation, and they're getting married.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I think that under the best of circumstances, it's hard to maintain a marriage when you get married young and you don't even know who you are. So under these circumstances, don't expect to have anything going on, because it's just an impossibility. I really do. I don't understand why, you know, I always say that I wish at 5 years old everybody gay knew they were gay. So they wouldn't have to sit and struggle with it forever until they, you know, try every possibility not to be gay, only to find out it's not going to work. But, you know, that's not the way it is. You just, I think everybody, it develops at a different point. Am I right on that?
I think so. I mean, the only, I've heard of a few enlightened parents who have looked at their kids and said to them, you know, if you're straight, if you're gay, either way, it's fine. I love you, and we want you to be happy. But that doesn't happen very often. No. Doesn't happen very often.
How much do you think that environment plays a part in this, in homosexuality?
I think it's primarily nature, not nurture. So I believe it's much more genetics than it is environment. I think environment can confuse folks. It can leave them wondering because they don't have enough information. So for instance, in the case of straight boys who are sexually abused by a pedophile, may have questions about themselves and fear that they're gay, comes forward, they, you know, they find themselves physically attracted to women. But they may have some expressed confusion in that they don't know quite how to label themselves because of a, you know, a dreadful first encounter that was forced on them. But
I know, and I really call it the abuse excuse, because I don't see that many genuine gay men who don't go through the straight ports of their life say that they were abused, nearly as many as I think men who use this as an excuse when they're married and they have to come up with something to tell their wives. Because
Yeah,
the only thing I could compare it to, and I just came up with this recently, I don't know why it took me like 30-some years, because when people would say, well, he was abused, so this is why he's gay, and I would say, well, that doesn't make any sense at all. If something was abusive, then why would you want that? So now I compare it to girls who were sexually abused, and I say, when a girl is sexually abused, does that mean when she gets older she's going to be into sadomasochism? You know, if it was such a horrendous experience, but now this is what she's going to be part of? So I said, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
You know, I don't think you can change somebody's sexual orientation, but some women do feel some concern, so maybe you can reassure them. They have a gay husband, the gay husband has a boyfriend or a man friend or a husband. You know, they're in either a relationship or a committed relationship. Children being around the gay husband and his partner is not going to influence sexuality, is it?
No. I mean, if they're healthy adults, you know, living in integrated lives, then they're going to, you know, foster good self-esteem in the child, etc. And they're going to model how to treat another person in a relationship, just as a happily married straight couple are going to model how to, you know, treat each other in a relationship. But no, it's not going to turn a kid gay or, well, I was raised by two straight parents. Didn't make me straight either, did it?
No,
you know?
Brian, I don't think it did. Are you sure? No. Although I do believe that gay is genetically predisposed, and I say, show me a gay person, I'm going to show you gay in the family. And I don't mean it has to be a parent, but it could be a cousin, an uncle. I mean, I have very rarely ever found an isolated gay person. How about in your experience?
Well, I guess what I would point to is the evidence that I tend to gravitate more towards, and I'm not dismissing what you're saying at all. I would affirm that, but I think that the twin studies that have been done recently are the ones that really indicate that it is genetic and chemical. What happens in utero in the brain with the neurochemistry during gestation and the stages of the growth of the fetus to the point of birth, that tends to be also very compelling evidence, the brain chemistry there. So I would encourage it. I'll see if I can find a good article on the brain studies, and you can post that online. How does that sound, Bonnie?
Well, we can discuss it next time when you come back on our show.
There you go. Yeah, let's plan on doing that.
Yes, because I think it's really important that people are really concerned. And, you know, I like to reassure them that just because, you know, your children are staying with a gay husband or visiting there, that you don't have to be concerned, you know, that that's going to rub off on them.
No.
However, I tell them it's always possible if you have a gay husband, you can have a gay child.
Right.
You know, statistically, every record that I've kept over the years, you know, shows me that it's been double, you know, the chance of having a gay child if you have a gay parent.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to deal with that, and you have to accept it and reassure your children that no matter what, you love them.
That's right.
You know, because you don't want them to have the same life that your husband had.
Right.
So I know it's sometimes hard to balance that.
Yep.
You know, when you're angry. But you can't make the anger around your children over the gay, you know, because then once again, they're going to think there's something bad about gay.
Right.
Do you agree with that?
I would completely agree with that. It's what he, you know, the choices he made with his orientation, that was the problem, not his orientation.
And that's why I think it's so important for women to realize it's a possibility. And you always say, well, if it were my children, I would love my children. It wouldn't matter to me. But you know what, Brian? I know that's really true. But I do want to say that when it happened to me, it was still a shocker.
Sure.
You know, when I found out that my daughter was a lesbian, you know, it really took me by shock, because I think in our minds we think a gay husband, maybe our sons will be gay. You know, we're not thinking about our daughters are going to be a lesbian. And, you know, when I first found out about mine, no matter how open-minded and liberal I am on the subject, when all of a sudden it hit me, this is now my daughter's life, it was really upsetting to me. And not because of any kind of homophobia, but just because it was. I mean, it was just upsetting to know that my daughter's now going to have to live a life where she's facing obstacles that, you know, she normally wouldn't have to face.
Yep.
You know, I think it's just, you know, like I say, the nature that we think that this is not going to be an easy life, that people are going to have, you know, all kinds of prejudice against them. You know, it's hard. I mean, you know, you see what your husbands are going through, so then you think, no, this is what my child is going to have to go through.
So
it is a very, delicate balance, but it's really important for your children not to feel a sense of self-hatred because of your relationship with your gay husband.
Exactly.
And that when you say negative gay things, you know, they're thinking that you're talking about them.
Right, yeah.
Yep. So it's a lot of different things that women have to balance with these. There's no easy answers and no easy solutions. All we can do is give suggestions and tell you that we can feel the pain that you're going through. There's, like I say, it takes time, it takes effort. I think that time is a great healer if you allow it to heal you. You know, I think the problem is that when you're living it at the moment, you feel like this is never going to be over and every day is going to be a horrible day. You know, recovery is a process. It doesn't happen overnight, and you can't feel bad because you don't feel wonderful in a week or two.
That's right. That's right. So, I come back to being, be aware of where, what's going on in your head and in your heart. Be gentle with yourself, but be like a good parent to yourself. Redirect your attention to things that are good and helpful for you. Take good care of yourselves.
And, Brian, before we end tonight, I just want to make sure that women know how to get in touch with you if they're looking for counseling. You do counseling through Skype if people can't get to you in Nashville, Tennessee.
Exactly.
You can do telephone counseling or Skype counseling. And if they want to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Well, first of all, they can always find me through your website by finding my website there. And so say your website again.
Okay, husbands.com.
Yep. Or they can go to www.drbrianhooper.com. And then they'll see my email address, they'll see my phone number there. Feel free to give me a call. You know, we can talk. I'll set up a session for you. And wherever they are on their journey of recovery, moving on, you know, I've got clients who are at the very beginning. I've got folks who are now getting really creative, and I'm acting like a personal coach to them with their brilliant lives and what they're doing with them. And what a privilege and honor that is to support them in that. I love it. Absolutely love it.
Did you say that you had something else to mention tonight? I'm sorry, I got off track.
Oh, you know what? Let's do it for next time. It's a fun little project I'm working on, and something folks will be able to download off my website. I'll just put it that way, okay? And so we'll talk about it more next time.
All right, that sounds good, and you'll be back with us at the end of March.
I shall be.
And so I just want to thank you so much for your time, as always, and the comfort that you bring our women. I know that so many of them tell me, oh, when's he coming back, when's he coming back? You know, so they really do find tremendous comfort in you and by listening to you. So, Brian, I truly do appreciate it. And if any of you you know, once again, want to get in touch with Ryan, you can go to gayhusbands.com. My right-hand side for links, you'll find his link, or write to me at bondk@aol.com, and I'll be more than happy to, you know, forward your information. So, Brian, thank you for a wonderful show.
Thank you.
Some always very provocative and interesting thoughts and things
well, you
to think about.
Well, you ask great questions. People need to know we don't rehearse all this stuff ahead of time. We may talk about a thing or two, but every once in a while, you know, you give me some zingers. But so far, I think we're fielding them okay.
You're doing good.
Time.
I want to just see if I can, you know, sidetrack you there, but you're really always
yeah.
on target.
Yeah.
I can
well,
trust
gotta,
you with
no.
anything.
Well, you know, as Her Majesty the Queen of England has taught us, keep calm and carry on.
Exactly. So love to all of our listeners, and I won't be here next week. Remember, I'll be in Houston, but in 2 weeks from now, we'll be back, and we'll be having Marianne Glynn as our guest. I think you'd really like listening to her, Brian. Marianne is a licensed social worker, therapist, and she works with victims of post-traumatic stress out of relationships. So women who have been in abusive relationships on how to, you know, put their lives back on track and how to get past it and to, you know, move on to a better space in life.
So I so respect what she does. That's awesome.
Isn't it? Yeah, so I'm really excited. She'll be our guest when we come back on March 10th. And then before we turn our heads, you'll be back with us again at the end of the month.
Alrighty.
So thanks again, Brian. You know I love you.
Love you too.
All right, and good night to all our listeners, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.